Welcome to another new episode of the Three Bid League podcast. As always, I am your host, Tyler, joined by Matt. And later in the show, we're going to talk with Carter Chapley of the Scoops with Danny Mac site to talk about the crazy second edition of the Arch Baron Cup and where the now second place St. Louis Billikens are headed for the rest of the season. But Matt, we'll start things off here with the Friday 10 game from this week. The two conference favorites, St. Bonaventure taking on Richmond. They've both had disappointing years so far, but now it almost is starting to feel like they are moving in different directions. And so I want to start here. Are we sure Richmond isn't one of the four best teams in this conference? I don't think they're getting an at-large bid at this point, but if you tell me they have a 0% chance of winning the conference tournament, I'd have to say that you're wrong at this point.
Well, first of all, respect to the Atlantic 10, respect to ESPN for accommodating the start time of this game for the senior citizens on Bonaventure and Richmond that had to get some sleep. It was at 6 o'clock for some reason. I think for Richmond, though, I'm sure that Tyler Burton, I'm feeling better about him being one of the four best players in the conference. I don't know about Richmond as a top four team. This was a big week for them, getting to 6-4 in the A-10 now. So they're right back in that picture. And it was an encouraging game, but for me, I look at it, Tyler Burton has one of the best individual games we're going to see all year, dropping 36 points. I wasn't blown away by the rest of his team, so I'm feeling better about Richmond than I did the last time we recorded. I'm also just not sure how much a win over the Bonnies means right now, especially at home.
I'm not sure that individual win is the big thing for them right now, but they are starting to play much better basketball. They've won 5 of their last 6. The lone loss was the 2-point loss to VCU, which they easily could have won. And by the way, right before that, they lose the crazy shootout to Davidson, and they beat UMass. So after what was really just a god-awful first two games of conference play, they've played decently well. And I'm just trying to figure out what is their path to number 4 here, because they're currently sitting in 5th. They have a chance to really kind of put some dirt on George Mason's double bye hopes here. If they could somehow pull off the home-and-home sweep this week, which is very doable given that we have no idea if Oduro's going to play for George Mason. And if he doesn't, then Richmond sure as hell will be favored at home and maybe even on the road. And then they play LaSalle at home, and if they don't blow that for seemingly the 8th straight year, all of a sudden they're in great position. And I think if they get the double bye, 2 really, really awesome Burton games might do it for them, because they got enough elsewhere to win another game where he is only moderately good if Gilliard's awesome instead.
Mm-hmm. I mean, these two games against George Mason are absolutely critical, because Mason, along with, I would say, Dayton and VCU, are Richmond's biggest competitors for those last couple double bye spots, if we're assuming that Davidson, and I think St. Louis is looking pretty safe right now too. So if they could pull a sweep here, which is much easier said than done, it seems like across all conferences, when you play back-to-back against the same opponent, usually it results in a split, but those are going to be huge. They still get another chance against VCU. I don't know. I think Richmond, you're right that they have been playing some pretty good basketball recently, winning 5 out of their last 7. The problem, though, what you said about VCU earlier, about how it's a game they easily could have won, you could say that about just about all of Richmond's games this year. I mean, really, the only time they got blown out was that conference opener against St. Joe's. Every other game, they weren't that far out of it. They were pretty competitive until the last few minutes. So if they can find a way to start getting those close games to swing the other direction, then we could be looking at a contender. I don't know. It seems like Richmond hasn't had that good mojo all year in these close games.
Really, the only thing to me at this point, because the rest of the team is playing better now than they were in the non-conference when Burton was on fire.
Mm-hmm.
But if Burton has really turned it around. And this all kind of got sparked by that weird three-pointer that he hit at the first half buzzer against Duquesne, because he had 2 points at that point and then bounced back and had 13 in the second half. And then obviously goes just crazy blazing inferno against St. Bonaventure and drops 36, which I watched every single moment of that game. And that still actually feels higher than I thought it was. I thought it was only 33, but it really just kind of feels like his confidence is back. That was the first real true slump of his career. And I wonder if maybe the reason it prolonged so long and so horribly was mental. But this week, he was the best player in the conference. He's capable of being the best player in the conference.
I don't know what he did against Duquesne. I'm just going to say Yuri Collins, though. I don't want his quadruple nickel against George Mason to get lost.
Yeah,
he had a pretty insane week, too.
They'll probably be co-players of the week.
That's what the A-10
does. The A-10 doesn't like making tough decisions, so.
No, that's why we have six men on the all-conference. Yeah, every week is co-players of the week. It's just a participation award conference. But anyway, no, Burton did have an outstanding week, too, and it is good. It's important for Richmond that he got back on track, because I think we talked about it last week with Stu, how over like a six-game stretch, he was not a non-factor, but he wasn't reaching the levels he was at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, we'll see this week, because I think this is a little bit of a tougher matchup for him. He'll be going up against Schwartz and Gaines, who are two guys who are pretty well set up to guard him. And if he keeps the big performances rolling, then I'm back on that ship. And I'll take an excerpt as I shamelessly plug my top 30 player article on busting brackets. If anyone hasn't read it yet, go take a look and feel free to yell at me about what I got wrong, apparently. But I ended the Tyler Burton thing with just a simple statement. This next month is probably the biggest of his career. He could either end this year as a possible NBA draft pick, not even moving forward, but maybe even this year. Or he could just be some disappointing guy who played well in the non-com when nobody had good film on him. This week, he looks flat out like a guy who's going to go somewhere in the 40 to 50 range of this year's NBA draft. Forget about even possibly transferring. He could be in the league next year. So this is a big week. And respect to Devonte Gaines, who I love as a player, but he's a mid-tier starter on a mid-major team. And if you're that guy, you're going to find a way to outplay him. So that's what I'm going to be watching for this week more than anything else. I want to see how Burton reacts here to his first mega game of conference play.
Oh, I don't like that. Ticket Gaines is really good this year. I'm going to push back just a little bit on him being a mid-tier starter. I think he's borderline all conference, to be honest, but that might depend on where Mason finishes.
He is in a normal year. It's a really, really deep year this season.
Seems like there are more good wings than usual in the A-10 too. But yeah, last thing on Burton too, like for his NBA draft potential, I mean, all the 3-point shooting I think is going to get the attention, but he also had one of the best putback dunks of the season within that game. I don't know if it was SportsCenter top 10 worthy, but it was a really nice play. So I guess just real quick on the other side of this, do we want to talk about, I mean, St. Bonaventure just had a rough week going 0-2.
Yeah, well, you kind of triggered exactly what I wanted to talk about with St. Bonaventure. Tyler Burton gets that putback dunk because they just lost him on the box out.
Yep.
And when you go back and look at that game just throughout, it's not just him. It's Andre Gustafson. It's Jacob Gilliard. These wings off the ball just kept getting open. And honestly, like, Richmond should have won that game by 30. Their other perimeter guys were missing open threes. And Burton was basically bailing them out. Like, if they get those same looks this week for Gilliard and Gustafson, they're going to go down. It was a fluky bad luck game for them. Like, I don't get it. I don't know if either these guys just kind of quit which would seem so bizarre given the mentality that they had all of last season, or if Schmidt literally ran them into the ground. Like, are we sure that these five just aren't completely gassed? Because they look like it the whole damn game. And they've kind of done this all season, but this was by far the worst. Like, they're just literally not playing off-ball defense. It was so, so, so bad.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest and say I missed pretty much all of the Davidson game, but I'm assuming that went the same way since Davidson
made
12 threes.
Part of that, Davidson made a lot of tough shots, but...
Yeah, and that's
I would still give the Bonnie's Wings a B-minus defensively in that game, in one where last year they would have stepped up.
Yeah, I don't know with St. Bonaventure. I think people point to fatigue and the lack of bench minutes as why. Like, that's the only reason why they're having a disappointing year. I do think it's more complicated than that. I mean, I know there were fewer games last year, but I don't see how things would have been that much different with fatigue and how they were so much better last year. I think a lot of it has to be mental for them, just setting up very high expectations, bringing back the entire team. I think a lot of it honestly just has to do with now, this year, every coach in the conference has seen St. Bonaventure, or I guess George Mason and Fordham, they haven't since they have new coaches, but you know, it's just the exact same as what we got last year. Maybe teams were better prepared and they knew what they were going to face when they played the Bonnies, but I don't know. I don't want to count them out for the A-10 tournament, despite the fact that they will have to win four games in a row. I don't think they're getting a double bye anymore, but it just doesn't make sense. They were so good last year and never could have expected this.
It's like how I felt about Richmond before this week. I need to see a sign. Richmond showed us half of a sign with Burton bouncing back, but I mean, the simple fact is for years we've been able to reliably count on Mark Schmidt teams getting better and having internal improvement every year. And four of the five key guys either are the same or got worse. Just a quick shout out to Jalen Attaway, who once again continues to kind of be the shining light of this team because he was pretty good in that game. And he is the one guy that has gotten significantly better this season. But The guards are worse. Ashunahi's the same. I don't think Lofton's fully healthy. I don't think he ever fully recovered from that ankle injury. But, yeah, it's getting to be about time to cross him off. And I never thought we'd get to that point.
And I guess if we do want to talk about fatigue as one factor, maybe, I think looking at Jaron Holmes, he was maybe the breakout player on offense last year, one of them. And his three-point shooting's down to 18% in conference. He's another guy that just never comes out of the game, and he hasn't been able to get in a good shooting rhythm recently. So, I don't know. I mean, I hope they start playing better. I feel bad watching them at this point. It hasn't been fun to see them lose over and over, but it's hard to be super confident either that they're going to fix it at this point in the year. Although one thing I do want to say quickly about the Bonnies, I think this is a perfect case study about how little we know about coaching and like how good a coach actually is, what impact they have on their team. Because last year, Mark Schmidt was a god. I mean, every single A-10 fan, everyone you would talk to, every broadcaster, they would talk about the outstanding job he's doing. This year, I've literally seen a few extreme people calling for his job. I don't know about that. I would definitely say he hasn't gotten the most out of his team this year, but I'm not ready to call him a bad coach either. It's only this 1 year.
This is probably the worst coaching year he's ever had at Bonaventure.
Well, yeah, it's a bad year for him, but I just think, I don't know, we flip-flop on these so often, and I'm not ready to give up on him. I mean, he's won conference tournaments before, so could happen still this year. But anyway.
All right, so before Carter Chapley joins us and we get deep into the Arch Barron Cup, because let's be honest, that's what we all want to talk about right now. We're going to hit three rapid-fire questions real quick. So the first one to you, do we worry about VCU? I think it's probably at this point more of a do we worry about their ability to get a double bye? Because their at-large chances are probably dead unless they drop maybe one more game the rest of the year.
They'd have to win at St. Louis. That's their only Q1 left. And they also get Mason on the road, which is Q2. I'm worried about them if Vince Williams isn't healthy. I mean, my goodness.
I think that's the easy answer here.
Yeah. He was surprisingly out before the Dayton game. We had no knowledge of that until about an hour before. And clearly they missed him on both sides of the ball because Dayton was getting everything they wanted on offense in that 30-point win. And VCU also really missed his offensive game and three-point shooting. I don't know. They need to get back to where they were on defense. They're still pretty far behind Dayton for conference-only stats. They're behind Rhode Island, too, who we're about to get to. I don't know. I don't feel as good as I did last week where I had them solidly the second-best team in the conference. If Williams comes back and is healthy, then I think they're right back where they were as, a very serious threat to win the A-10. But if he comes back at 80%, I don't think they have much of a chance, really. He's so important to what they want to do.
If Williams is healthy, I still just have them easily in the 2-4 range with Dayton and St. Louis. I mean, it was a tough week without him. You saw how important he was. And one of the biggest things, that Duquesne game was the first time in months where Hassan Ward really made a big impact.
Yeah.
He had kind of just receded into the background this year, and he got a bunch of extra minutes with Williams and Deloach being out, and he finally responded with an awesome game. So that's encouraging for them. If they can get him back to his defensive player, his old defense, possible defensive player of the year level performance, then they're right back where they should be. So number two, we can hit this a quick yes or no. Like you mentioned, I think David Cox is undoubtedly on the hot seat. Do we think he survives if this continues this way?
It's just been shocking. Rhode Island is in complete free fall right now. They've lost 5 in a row. The one game before that was a big comeback to win against LaSalle at home by 2 points. And looking at Rhode Island, their real struggles, their offense is down to 237th overall in KenPom. So they're approaching VCU levels of suck. I mean, they can't shoot at all. Their three-point shooting has gone from bad to horrendous. I don't know. I thought Cox was going to be safe halfway through the season. Rhode Island was playing pretty well, but it just feels – I feel like we've said this before in prior seasons. It just feels very much like he's trying to fit that square peg in a round hole where he's just got all these big men. With Jeremy Shepard being banged up and not playing well the last couple of weeks since he's been hurt, they have very little guard play. And I don't know. I'm not very confident in him turning around this season for sure. Just they don't have the shooting to – compete offensively against most teams. Still good on defense, but that's only going to take them so far.
I just kind of never liked this roster all year. And we basically warned against the mirage-iness of that good non-conference schedule. There was a lot of bum teams. They are really good against Boston College for some reason. I think they like him enough there, and he's done so well with recruiting that – if he can keep them out of the pillow fight, he probably gets one more chance next year. But at this point, they're right in the middle of that battle. I think they're good enough defensively. If I had to predict right now, I think they sneak into the 9-10 spot. He survives, but next year he comes in with a lot of heat on him.
Yeah. So one thing, too, from this weekend with Rhode Island, I can't believe you didn't, like, call me or anything. TJ Weeks dropped 30 points on them. And you had nothing to say. Or is there too much going on on Saturday?
The A-10 not put four games at the same damn time? What is this, a Wednesday night?
It was an embarrassment of riches at 2:00.
Like, I'm trying to watch the Arch Baron Cup. Davidson's losing, so we gotta keep an eye on that to make sure GW doesn't completely ruin their at-large chances. So, like, I don't think I saw the Rhode Island UMass box score until there was maybe 2 minutes left. And then I was just mad that I didn't get to see the 3J heat check that I've been waiting 2 years for. So
And a triple nickel, all in the same game.
thanks to the schedulers. Incredible job there. Meanwhile, it's Sunday and we're watching golf. Like, we couldn't have just had like St. Joe's Fordham today. You don't have to have your games on USA just to put them at creative times. Like, come on.
Standalone games.
Yeah.
We support that on the 3-bit league.
The Winter Olympics show up and we just put everything Saturday at 2. Good job.
Yeah, the Olympics. I didn't think about that. Yeah, that's really what screwed it up. That really ruined the A10 for the next couple of weeks. So if you haven't already gotten ESPN Plus, you're probably going to want to for the last month of the year.
All right, so final rapid-fire question, yes or no. Davidson here now hits a stretch. Home St. Joe's, at Rhode Island, home Duquesne. All three of those potentially resume-damaging games. Do they get through this stretch 3-0? Because if they do, then they're in pretty great shape to kind of just roll into the tournament at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason that I posed this question to you, you look back over the last couple weeks, their defense really has fallen off quite a bit, where early in the conference season, I thought they were improved on that end. Turns out maybe that's not so. They just gave up 73 to GW. I mean, LaSalle kept it pretty close at Belk Arena last weekend. I don't know. They're down to 218th in the country overall, so I'm just not sure if their offense is going to take them far enough. It feels like they're going to have good shooting nights against these bad teams. I'm still overall feeling pretty good about Davidson getting an at-large, but I think their defense is something to watch, especially against someone like St. Joe's who could put up a bunch of threes. I'm not really worried about Rhode Island for the reasons we just talked about. And then Duquesne, I don't know. They're kind of just a wild card. They're in last place right now, but they do feel like they're definitely not the worst team in the A-10, so.
I'll just give it a simple no. I don't think they step up here. Even though they've struggled, St. Joe's, they're just going to play some crazy shootout. They should be able to outshoot them. And then they get the two free fall teams. Like, mm-hmm. Rhodey and Duquesne right now, I think they'd both mightily struggle playing against LaSalle, UMass, anybody. So,
yeah,
not too confident. But it's time to move along to our Arch Barron Cup discussion with Carter Chapley. But first, we want to remind you guys to tune in to the Ivy League Hoops Hour, your source for all things men's basketball in the Ancient Eight. Hosted by Coach Sidney Johnson, former head coach of the Princeton Tigers from 2007 to 2011, and his co-host, former grad assistant Lawrence Schuler, you'll hear from student-athletes and coaches on their experiences and perspectives on competing in the Ivy League, issues to challenge Ivy League athletes, and analysis on the teams and players from Coach Johnson. All of this in spite of Lawrence's best efforts to deconstruct the whole thing. We invite you to listen to the Ivy League Hoops Hour podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you consume your podcast content. All right, we are now joined by Carter Chapley of Scoops with Danny Mack. Great St. Louis blog, not just covering the Billikens, but all things St. Louis sports. Carter, it has been long overdue. Thank you for coming on the show.
It is my absolute pleasure to come in here and talk A10 hoops with the two experts.
Well, thank you. A little flattery might have to help bump you up to the top of the pecking order. We got too many good people covering St. Louis right now, but you know, it had been far too long for us to have you on the show. So we figured this was a good week. St. Louis coming off of not only a huge win in the Arch Barron Cup, but also winning the crazy double overtime game against George Mason. Probably the best week of the season for the Billikens. So I guess we have to start with the game that's fresh in everybody's mind, the game that has set Twitter ablaze. And I guess we'll start with the part that is probably the most important, the most conversation worthy. What got into Martin Lindzen? Because he was incredible in that game.
Yeah, that feels more like what the Martin Lindzen of like early this season and last season was. He got hurt during the Auburn game at the end of, I think it was the end of December. He hurt his ankle, and then the team went on COVID pause. And when they got back from COVID pause, he was still, you know, still hurting on that ankle. And they said it was day to day, but it turns out it really wasn't. And so he had been kind of sheltered coming back. And they had talked about how they have the flexibility with Francis Okoro to kind of let him get limited minutes. But what Martin does best is just fundamentals. He's really fundamentally sound in the post. He's really, you know, he's physically strong. He doesn't have the same length that a guy like Franco has. But I think we kind of saw yesterday was just, you know, Jurri and Martin kind of working really well in that two-man game, and Martin just kind of capitalizing on the situations that Jurri puts him in. I mean, Martin's really good at getting position. That's probably his greatest strength as a big man, is earning position on the block. And so when you have a guy like Jurri who can put the ball in his hands once he gets there, he's hard to stop.
Yeah, and I think that was definitely a big difference, too, from the first Arch Baron Cup, where he was still coming off his ankle injury. And I know you were at the game, so I don't know if you caught this or not, but the announcers were just obsessed with him as the pride of Dusseldorf. They loved his game. And I also think defensively, too, St. Louis's bigs really shut down Daron Holmes, Toumani Kamara. They only combined for 10 points, and that's something where Dayton usually makes a living, is at the rim. So I felt like overall, too, just the defensive game for St. Louis, their bigs had a big upper hand throughout.
Well, I think, like, with Martin coming back from injury, it lets them both, you know, Francis and Martin, and to a lesser extent, Lacina, who's that third string, you know, if he gets in, it's usually not what you want to ideally on offense, but he can play a little bit of defense. It lets them play more free. Like, it increases your, you know, ability to foul by 100% when you have Martin and Francis. And so you don't have to be so worried about fouling out. And that's kind of what happened in that George Mason game where it went to double overtime, where it was, you know, Martin fouls out, Frank fouls out, neither one of them are fully healthy. Now you got to go with this freshman who started playing basketball 5 years ago against an A-10 player of the year candidate in Josh Odoro. And so having Martin back kind of improves the overall depth and the freedom of, you know, you can play physically. You can go against Daron Holmes and try and bang with him for 40 minutes, and you're not going to get totally punished if you take two fouls quick.
Yeah, that game really kind of reminded me of the 2020 edition, the one in Chaffetz with the famous, or I guess to you guys, infamous Crutcher shot at the end. But
yeah,
the first half really played out the same way, where Travis Ford just packed the paint, and really, Dayton could do nothing about it. It was really starting to give me a headache seeing Daron Holmes just continually catch the ball 18 feet from the basket, because he's just not set up to do damage from out there. And we almost never see him out there even half as frequently as we did yesterday. And 2 years ago, the same thing happened to Obi, where Jimmy Bell Jr. Yeah. was able to kind of push him to the perimeter, make Dayton have to play outside. Now, in that game, Dayton just had some absolutely incredible guards. In this one, they had some good guards who played poorly, with the exception of Kobe Elvis. So that really worked, and I think other teams might try to do it going forward, although no one else has the personnel to do it like Travis Ford does.
Yeah, this SLU team is really unique I think there are maybe more skilled teams in the Atlantic 10. I don't think there's any team that has the combination of like skill and athleticism and size to kind of go with them. I think Dayton's probably the closest one to SLU in that case. So I know they talked about it after the game in the scrum. I think Fred Thatch said it. In that first matchup this year, they really tried to run Dayton off the three-point line. That was how they thought they were going to defend and go a little bit more one-on-one. But what ended up doing was letting the floor space out too much, so it would let guys like Gibson Jimerson, who is an okay defender, but he's not going to blow anybody's socks off. He got totally, you know, just roasted time and time again. So I think this time they went back to that. I think you're right. They went back to that pack the paint strategy that really worked 2 years ago. The problem was 2 years ago, Dayton shot the threes a lot better, especially with the personnel they had. I seem to recall Ryan Mikesell yelling something at us about not being able to guard him 2 years ago. So that was the first moment I realized that comeback was happening for Dayton.
Yeah, well, the game didn't end the same way this time. Luckily for St. Louis, Dayton just did not have the three-point shooting to catch up. But overall, I think I agree with what you said, too, about St. Louis having that best combination of skill and athleticism. And if you look at KenPom too, I think it really just applies to both sides of the ball. The Billikens are the only team in the league right now, top four in offense and defense, where pretty much all of the other contenders, like, you know, Dayton and VCU are really good on defense, but don't score as much. Davidson and George Mason, also Richmond, really good on offense, but they don't defend like St. Louis does. So I think that balance and that unique skill set that the team has, that does make them a difficult matchup around the league. So I thought that was a good point.
It really, SLU's really biggest problem right now is they do score well. I mean, they scored, what, 71 in this game? They've scored, you know, up, I think they average, which is an inflated average because of some early season stuff. They average close to like 80 a night or something. Their biggest, and we saw it with this game, but luckily SLU's defense was able to kind of force the same issue. They go on huge streaks of not being able to find offense. Like six minutes was the longest when I clocked during their loss to UMass. And the Atlantic 10 is too good to go on 6 minute streaks where you can't score. And that's going to be the thing where you're going to be, where I'm most afraid of with this team's offense.
So just real quick, I want to just clarify. So the 127 point performance of against Harris Stowe is not indicative of what they're capable of doing in the A-10.
Well, I mean, if there was all of a sudden a Division II HBCU playing in the Atlantic 10, then maybe. But no, not in this. Or I think it's not even Division II. I think Harris Stowe is in the NAIA actually. So, yeah, not exactly the same.
I like it. Power move by Travis Ford, build some confidence, pump up the stats a little bit, and maybe it did help because this is a really good offensive team for St. Louis, despite losing Javonte Perkins before the season even started. But I think one guy we really need to talk about too, who is coming off his best week of the season, I would say. I guess he's the 11th best point guard in the country since he didn't make the Bob Cousy watch list. I don't know if we'd all agree with that, but Yuri Collins, I mean, great in the Arch Barron Cup, also scored 35 and hit the game winner against George Mason. What have you seen in him the last few weeks? Because I would say, you know, the first half of the season, still racking up assists. I wouldn't have called him one of the best A-10 point guards at that point, but clearly the last 3 or 4 weeks, he's been playing better than any other guard in the conference. So what have you seen that's changed in his game where he's just gone up to an entirely new level?
I think after that UMass, that loss to UMass particularly, and some ones earlier this season, like Auburn and UAB and Belmont to a certain extent, but after that loss to UMass particularly, I think Yuri kind of realized that this is his team to lead. I think it's been it's very tough to take over a program in your third year when you've had like really strong leadership in your first 2 years with Jordan Goodwin and Hassan French, but I think that loss kind of helped jar some things loose and get him kind of realizing to call his own number. He by default is going to look to be the guy to passes. Like he was very hesitant, even now I would say, to like call his own number in a situation even late in the shot clock. He is by nature going to look to be a pass first point guard. But the way he's shooting, and I know he went into the off season, I had a story quoting him saying he was tired of being disrespected from the 3-point line. Like he wanted guys to guard him. And so I think even now, just with his shooting ability, he feels the confidence to be able to call his own number. And he's developed this really sweet little mid-range jumper that's really tough to guard. It's really hard to, but more than anything, when you have to think about him as a scorer, it opens up so much more as a passer and as a rebounder as well. It gets him more space because you just can't stop someone from doing absolutely everything they want. Like you like with Gibson, we've seen it happen this week where teams are like, we're going to take away your 3-point shooting. We're going to make you go to the bucket. If we get fouled, we get fouled, but we're not going to let you beat us that way. And it's really, you know, he's really struggled this last week considering it was SLU's best week this year. I'd say that's a nice little correlation, but with Yuri, he does so many things well that it's hard to stop him. And so now that he's used to calling his own number, and being willing to take that shot, you know, against George Mason, he took the first two shots of the game and they're both threes. I couldn't believe it. That's the first time he's ever done anything like that. So it's nice to see him taking over, like, and having the confidence to be that, you know, he's a number one as a point guard, but he's also the number one for SLU.
Yeah, and I mean, looking at his stats too, his first two seasons combined at St. Louis, he made 18 three-pointers. He's already got 18 this year, and it's at the highest percentage of his career too. So I do think that is huge. That makes him so much tougher to defend. And I felt like, too, watching the Dayton game, you know, after a couple made shots, they had to put more pressure on him around the perimeter, and that allowed him to get around defenders and get to the rim and, you know, dump it off to Vincent. It seemed like he did about five times in a row at one point. So, yeah, him being able to shoot, I think that probably has been one of the biggest things where just changes everything about how you have to plan against them.
Yeah. And it also – it doesn't hurt that I think Slew is trying to – you know, in times where he's getting that pressure, they're putting guys out there like Jordan Nesbitt, who is not the scorer that a lot of Slew Twitter wants you to think he is yet. But he is a decent secondary ball handler. And DeAndre Jones, who's the transfer from Central Arkansas, who is a very capable point guard in his own right. But they've managed to work a tandem there that works in terms of, like, alleviating ball pressure off the two of them. So that's not something they've had for a very long time. This is the first week where they've really shown that to make that work.
Great. So beyond kind of the big picture things that we've talked about, because this was such a great week for SLU and a lot of things went right, despite, like you mentioned, Jimerson was just not that great. So any other takeaways going forward that you feel like Travis Ford can lean on or implement in these next few weeks to kind of keep these big wins rolling in?
I think he's learning to trust his guys a little bit more. I think he's found his rotation that really works. His groups that really work. We're starting to see more repetitive lineups and rotational structures that go for periods of time that make sense. He's starting to trust guys like Rashad Williams to get like 3 or 4 minutes in there. I think the biggest thing that he did poorly early in the year, and it really came in those. I mean, I kind of write off Memphis as a loss because it's hard to know. Like, it's just such a different team now.
They played out of their mind in that game.
Yeah, like it's hard to know.
Probably the best they've been all season.
Yeah, it's hard to know what's true about that Memphis team. It's hard to know what's true about that, like, from that game from SLU. But the thing they did really poorly is they ran their starting five, what I'll call it, their five primary guys, into the ground against Auburn, Belmont, UAB. Like, they each of those guys had 40 minutes. And I think they need to do – they found a better job of getting Jiri 3 minutes here or 2 minutes there so that they can have more energy. So that's kind of the thing I see mostly is, you know, down the stretch in games, this team is looking fresher than they have all season. They're starting to get their sea legs, as some may say. And that's what's most exciting. They've kind of figured out how to play down the stretch.
Yeah, things are looking real good for them right now. And before we kind of look into the full outlook, just to wrap up this week, the fight that wasn't actually a fight. So you were in the arena. We were watching the garbage ESPN broadcast, which told us nothing and showed us nothing. So I'm more concerned about the kind of the geography here, which is, first of all, how close did Kobe Elvis get to actually getting in Jordaire Jett's face, or the opposite way? And everyone's screaming that Grant was trying to pick a fight. Was Grant even within 30 feet of him?
So I can say I don't know about Grant being within 30 feet. Grant got – I mean, the whole bench emptied into that, like, inside the three-point arc area. I don't know if they actually went into the stands or anything like that. So for context – I was seated on the opposite baseline in a media seating, which unfortunately, right after Jordan Nesbitt dunks, the cheerleaders stand up and I have to now, like, run. And all of a sudden I see a commotion underneath and I have to, like, run around the stadium to go find, like, what the heck's going on over there. As I understand it from what I can see, there is a row of photographers between the floor and where Jordaire Jett was sitting. So I don't think Elvis actually got, like, they never got, like, nose to nose, so to speak, but they were definitely jawing at each other. I don't think Jordaire ever got up out of his seat. I don't know. He never got on the floor. If I'm being completely honest, I think the whole thing is much ado about nothing. And it was a couple guys jawing at each other and they didn't like it. and Anthony Grant's already, you know, pissed off about the game, and for a lot of reasons, rightfully so. And he went in to go defend his guy, which, like, credit to him. That's just, like, if Travis Ward did the exact same thing at UD Arena, I'd be, like, supporting him about it. Like, that's the right thing to do. Did it escalate the situation? Maybe. But, like, it's not like there was a fight. Like, the way I saw it was, like, I thought, like, initially I thought, like, someone threw a punch. And then when I found out that wasn't the case, I was like, oh, okay, whatever. Like, yeah. just kind of a funny Arch Baron Cup moment that we'll all remember.
I mean, yeah, look, I mean, it looked like Elvis was the only one who actually ever got close to him, so.
And I know there's only one video out from a St. Louis photographer. He's a guy who does a lot of high school stuff. His name is Just Lobs. I don't know his first name, his real name, to be completely honest. He's got a video of the whole thing, and it doesn't seem like they ever get, like, too close, just a lot of yapping, which, I mean, I think our good friend Zach from the Midtown Madness podcast was doing more yapping all game than he was. So who knows what was really going on down there.
Yeah, God, and let's not try to pretend like Zach Miller's not going to be biased on anything.
Yeah, no, never.
Yeah, I mean,
I
feel like overall, like, I don't know. I mean, at least on Twitter, I'm going to say I think both fan bases overreacted a little bit. Like you said, kind of felt like a nothing burger in the end. Like, I don't think Jordan Jett, he wasn't really in the right. Like, he shouldn't have said stuff to the players. But also, like, I don't know if it's necessary for everyone to, like, the bench to empty either. So, in the end, I'm just hoping that the stare down Anthony Grant gave, like, ESPN so focused on him for 20 seconds probably. You know, that needs to become a meme because that was intense. That was amazing.
I think it already is.
What's that? Isn't there, like, a Darren Revelle tweet that's like, "I this is terrible for our league, but the content is too good." like that's exactly how I felt. Like it was such good content. Like, for if nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching it, like, upset about the game, of course, but I mean, looking back, like, it is, you know, it's another page in the Arch Baron Cup story that we're gonna remember, and so. I don't know. I'm really hoping after that game, I'd love to see a third round in, I guess, DC this year.
Yeah.
But no, I'm not, like, I don't know. Some Dayton fans were really mad. I'm not all that offended, I guess. I just thought it was kind of, you know, something you're going to get in a rivalry game sometimes. So anyway.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I'll add to add some context to it is that Jordan wasn't ejected. They basically just moved him so they could finish the last 2 minutes of the game,
which was smart. Like,
yeah, like
St. Louis handled that well. Yeah,
like they didn't eject. Like one of the ADs just, like, walked over, said, "We're gonna take you." Like, there's a little restaurant underneath Chaffetz Arena with, like, where the after party for the Hall of Fame event was gonna be anyways. So they're like, "Let's just get out of here. It's 2 minutes left. The game is over." And they just walked him out, and it just kind of, like, it's a bad visual. Like, I get it if you're not on the floor right there, like. It looks bad, but it's you know, I think there's a difference between being kicked out of your own building and just being like, Anthony Grant might try to kill you if you don't leave.
Right. Well, there's a good where he at. We haven't done that segment in a while, but Jordan Jett, a St. Louis Hall of Famer, and not kicked out of the arena. So we'll make that clear
Jett,
on this podcast.
Where he at? Still sitting in the little tiny arena jail under Chaffetz.
I love that idea. That'd
on
be really
the phone,
funny.
On the phone, talking to Kim English.
Yeah, not the only ejection
got,
of
got
today.
Ejected. Like, I think Kim English got ejected literally 6 minutes before Jordan Aird left the court.
That's so funny.
Yeah, big day of conflict in the A-10. So, I guess, you know, one more thing too we want to hit on for St. Louis. We talked a little bit about the outlook for the team moving forward, but. That Dayton win does help out quite a bit. It's a Q2 game for the Billikens, and now we see them up to 54th in the net. Mm-hmm. Joe Gennardi has them as the 8th team out, so kind of on the edge of what you'd consider the bubble. Do you think they can do enough the rest of the season? I guess, how optimistic are you that they can find their way in maybe as an at-large team?
I mean, I think they could. I mean, like, the pathway is there. I think the unfortunate part of the Atlantic 10 the last couple of years is that the national media seems to have this thought, and it kind of seeps into like public discourse that, like, any loss in the A-10 is just going to kill you, right? So, like, even if SLU lost to Davidson at Davidson, they'd fall. right? But that's not intrinsically a bad loss. So like, sure, like if SLU goes, you know, whatever, like X and one down the stretch, you know, win every game except for at Davidson, then yeah, sure. Like that's an at-large team. But I mean, if you lose to Richmond or one of these Bonaventure games coming up, the national media, who seems to kind of dictate the trends of at-large bids, kind of, you know, I don't think that's enough to get you in. But I think the same is true about a school like Davidson. Like, I think Davidson should be clear in with their resume. Dayton barring, I'm sure you guys know, like, Dayton barring like the first 3 weeks of the season is in, which, I mean, hypothetically, that should be enough to get you in regardless. But, you know, like if Davidson all of a sudden dropped a game to St. Joe's and an away game at VCU or whatever they've got left on their schedule, you know, they're not going to be in either. So it seems like right now it's kind of fruitless to talk about like at-large chances for SLU, because like, sure, if they went out, they're going to be in. If they go X and one, they're probably in with a good tournament resume. But it's kind of all about like what you've got going into like into DC. And then once you get there, you kind of start looking around the landscape and going, okay, who do I need to beat here? How far do I need to go? And that's kind of when I start paying attention.
I actually think Davidson's in a decently better spot because of the narrative thing, because they beat Alabama. And
yeah,
that really kind of turned the national media onto them as, hey, this is a potentially very good team. And they also have just a little Curry factor too, where you see Bob McKillop on the floor at Madison Square Garden when Steph Curry breaks the 3-point record a few days before that game. And so that just kind of helps the Davidson in the media's eyes, because then they can just compare Foster Lawyer to Steph Curry because he's a really good free throw shooter. Or they can just make 9 Curry references during a game because Davidson's good at shooting threes.
Something to talk
about. Yeah, that'll always help them. And meanwhile, for SLU, the schedule gets really weird now. The next 4 games are LaSalle, Bonaventure, Bonaventure, LaSalle. And
LaSalle.
Well, obviously, you got to win both of those LaSalle games. Those are just absolute resume murderers, because that's not even biased. That's a bad loss. But yeah. Bonaventure, the way they're playing right now, it almost kind of feels like SLU should probably take care of business in both of those too. But yeah, they're in decent shape.
That's what I mean,
shape.
Right?
The biggest thing is they get that at Davidson game.
Because that's a big resume builder.
If you win that game, that's huge. And like, if they win these next 5, they're going to be sitting in the bracket. If they win the next 4 and then lose at Davidson, that probably only bumps them down, what, behind 2-3 teams? Because it's not going to hurt their head at all if they lose a close game.
Yeah, going 5-0 would make them on a 10-game winning streak, which, I mean, I think is going to catch national attention eventually. Losing at Davidson, doesn't kill you. It shouldn't kill you at the very least, but it feels – I'm very jaded by the at-large, you know, process, where it feels like every time, you know, you lose in the Atlantic 10, it – like, you just drop off the map. So, like, Davidson is better set up, but it feels like with any team – like any top-end team in this conference can still make a run down the stretch. And if you play, you know, at 10 straight, you win 11 straight, you finish the conference with only 3 losses, like, that's going to be good enough to get you in and – hopefully SLU manages to pull that off.
Well, you know, starting with the next game, I can't think of anything scarier than being a bubble team and traveling to Tom Gold Arena. I know from experience. So
yeah,
I wish St. Louis luck in that one. Hopefully they don't. But hopefully that doesn't bother them too much, because that's going to – got to start there. Need that LaSalle game. But still, that is exciting, though. I mean, this time of year, they're in a position where they can play themselves in. And
yeah, they can still control their destiny.
Yep.
All right, Carter, we'll close things out with this. As I just continuously knock on wood here, we are just a shade over a month out from the A-10 tournament in D.C. And right now, just kind of the world outlook looks to be in a place that we should actually be able to have a pretty normal tournament this year around, after the last 2 being screwed up. But we'll take it back to 2020, where – thankfully, most of us were lucky enough that we had not yet departed when we started to realize the tournament was going to be canceled. You were one of the very few who made it there. And I would say you probably had the craziest story coming back. So I'll let you pick. Are we entitling this Planes, Trains, and Automobiles or Escape from New York?
Escape from New York, because it ultimately just led to me flying out. So I didn't use that many modes of transportation. Yeah, I mean, I got out there to see the pillow fight because it was going to be my first A10 tournament. And because I missed the 2019 one where Slew won, unfortunately, but I went to the NCAA tournament. So it's been a funny shift in what I've been able to do. But yeah, I got out there for the pillow fight. I tried to see the first games, and I was at Slew practice when we found out that the tournament was canceled, and there was a lot of commotion all of a sudden, and it became very clear there was not going to be any basketball played. I think at that point, like, the Big Ten had just canceled their tournament. You know, all the tournaments were getting canceled. I can't remember if they, you know, across town they pulled, I think it was like DePaul and Creighton off the court at
Madison and Square St. Garden. John's.
Creighton and St. John's, okay, off the court at Madison Square Garden for the Big East. So it was kind of looking like that. I kind of knew going into it that this was a possibility. What I didn't expect was to sit on hold with Southwest for the next, 36 hours and not be able to leave New York for the next 4 days with no tournament being had. So I kind of tried to take it in stride. I followed the team around for the next little while, kind of reporting on what it was like to try and get at this, you know, trying for them to escape to New York. But it was the nice part about it was my mom came down to watch the tournament with me. And so we got to hang out for a couple of days in a New York City apartment.
Yeah, I think now, like I said, I was lucky enough that I did not yet make it to New York when the cancellation was called, but still had some flights to shuffle around. So the Southwest hold music is basically seared in my brain as the first great nightmare of the COVID crisis. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That I think at one point I just went to bed and left it on hold. And if I missed it, I missed it. Again, I woke up and it was still going.
Yeah. My record was, 2 hours, 58 minutes, I believe, with them later in the weekend. But, you know, we're in a good spot right now. Knock on wood, yep. The case numbers are heading down in this country. So we're looking pretty good for everyone to make it out to D.C. and finally have a good A-10 tournament. And it's an A-10 tournament that looks like it is going to prominently feature the St. Louis Billikens, whether it is a long run or a surprising upset loss, given where they are positioned. So, Carter, two-part question here. Where does this Billikens season lead, and where can everyone find your great work chronicling the remainder of this season?
Ooh, where does the season lead? I think they end – I'm going to optimistically say they end up in the NCAA tournament. I think they play postseason play pretty much no matter what, but I think that – you know, we talked about it, you know, if I wanted to get too deep into the basketball, I think that they're a really tough team to beat with their talent and athleticism and depth now that Martin's back and feeling well. And God, I'm so happy to see Fred Thatch playing basketball after 2 years ago. So so I think they end up in the NCAA tournament. I'm hoping. I'd really like to see this specific group of guys make a run. And then you can find my stuff on scoopswithdannymac.com. That's a St. Louis-based blog. We do – well, now it's now a little bit bigger than a blog. We have a radio show. We have a TV show on Sundays, Sunday nights on Fox in the St. Louis market. And we have a podcast network where you can also listen to Billiken Babble. Matt, thank you – Tyler, thank you for joining us on that a couple of weeks ago to talk about the first Arch Baron Cup. It's 15 minutes where you can catch up on whoever the Billikens are playing for that coming game with the people who know the other teams best. You can listen to it on the way to Shavitz Arena if you really wanted to. So that's where you can find all my work and on my Twitter account at Chapley Media on Twitter.
Yeah, everyone go follow Carter. Go check out the great work he's doing. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And as always, thank you to everyone for listening. If you enjoyed the show, give us 5 stars on iTunes. Leave us a review. Shoot us a message on Twitter at @3BidLeaguePod. If you think there's something we could be doing better or something we're doing well, everybody stay safe out there. Enjoy it. We got exactly at the time of this recording 1 month to go in the college basketball regular season. Shakes, do not us down.